Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Ben Katzelman, who is the owner and founder of SculptedPeaks.com. I have a soft spot for this business. He creates beautifully handcrafted sculptures of mountains around the world, from the Grand Tetons to Kilimanjaro to Denali. And the story about how he started this business is, I would say, one of the more moving, if not the most moving stories I have heard on the podcast in 10 years. Pretty amazing. And we don't get into it right away, but kind of one of the key moments that shaped why he decided to do this, we get into after, you know, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes of talking. And it's, won't give it all away, but incredibly powerful. And I love how he's built his business, the intentionality behind it, the freedom and the exploration. And also, he's also able to interweave into his life. And of course, we talk some tactical stuff too about business and marketing mixed in there, but definitely more on the incredible life side of the podcast. So if you don't like Incredible Lives, yeah, you can tune out now. This will be less about hardcore Facebook strategies and more about building a pretty cool business that's kind of in line with what you want to do. So let's get into it. Hope you enjoy and really enjoyed my talk with Ben. I gave people a bit of high-level background on your current business, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but you were running Wander Bracelets before you were doing that, right? Can you give people a little bit of just background on how that business came to be and why you decided to sell it?
Yeah, so when I was 21, to give you a little bit of background, I was apprenticing with a furniture designer in Florida who was producing furniture in Bali, and I had the invitation to come over and spend a summer with him. So I was 21, turning 22, summer 2014, I went over there and I helped him with a whole bunch of projects for his business. He needed a new website. That got me into Shopify, and I got my first taste for what was possible with e-com. And there was just so much brimming at that point in time. The first co-working space had just opened up in Ubud, Bali. Shout out Ubud. And I got to go hang out there, and I met tons of people who were, you know, first wave digital nomads and into e-com. And that got the wheels in my head turning. And I met carvers one day when I was out riding around on my motorbike and was just fascinated with what they were doing. I love handicrafts. That's so much of what attracts me to Bali, is there are so many incredible handicraft traditions on one small island, and the ability to go village to village and have people that have such incredible dexterity that's been passed down for generations. It's just built into the culture in a way that it's hard to find elsewhere. And I happened to stumble upon this village of fine detail carvers, a group of villages of fine detail carvers. And I didn't know what I was walking into, but some of the best detail carvers in the world, 21, 22-year-old me, wanted to make charm bracelets. And that's what I did. So within 2 years, we had scaled the business up, and we had about 150 people carving, weaving, screen printing, sewing full-time. We were able to source everything from Bali. We didn't have to work with any supply chains on the outside. We never had to import anything from China. And I developed a real passion for fair trade artisan craft. It's really cool to see the livelihoods that you can provide to people with fair trade craft and how it impacts the local families.
I feel like fair trade is something that everyone knows what that means. You see it on coffee all the time, probably especially. It sounds good. I know that some people have like a certain level of cynicism about it. Maybe like, is this actually important? Does it actually make a difference? Sounds like it was pretty impactful for what you saw in your business. Like, can you give an example? What does it actually mean? What does fair trade mean in terms of your business? And like, how did that actually translate into the people that you were working with?
Yeah, so there's fair trade has different meanings. There's different like certification boards, for example, that'll give you a stamp. Coffee has its own thing. But the Fair Trade Federation group kind of sets the standards for what fair trade is and physical products. If you've ever walked the New York gift show or something like that, they have a whole section. They do incredible work. And the main thing is that you're providing opportunities for economically marginalized communities. So you're going out and you're designing products, you're finding a market, you're bringing the product to the market, and you're creating unique novel designs and bringing them to the artisans. The way I like to look at it is you're studying what are the materials that they have accessible, and then ideally, what are the traditional skill sets that they have? Is it weaving? You know, you might start a business like Yellow Leaf Hammocks, my friends Joe and Rachel, who are also members of E-commerce Fuel. We met years ago. I walked up to them at a trade show and I was like, oh my gosh, I love what you guys are doing. They're one of my favorite examples of a fair trade artisan product business, or PACA, the alpaca sweaters and apparel. They're, I think, another E-commerce Fuel member. It's really neat to see that giving people a job and the pride that can come with that is cool. And you can create something really original and special that has an incredible story behind it when you're working with natural local materials and skill sets that you couldn't do if you were trying to source a product from factory production.
Why did you sell it? What was it just, everyone has their own reasons, but for you, where were you that made you want to sell it?
Yeah, I hit burnout really bad in the start of 2021. Took a couple of months off. And when I came back to the table, I was just like, you know, I love working with artisans and I love fair trade artisan craft, but after 7.5 years of scaling and bootstrapping this business and learning my way through my 20s, I just didn't have what it took to keep going. I was like, I really need to take a year off. I came to the drawing board and I was like, okay, I need to move on. Let's find somebody who has the capacity to take this business over. Yeah. Then I set myself up to take a sabbatical.
Yeah. And again, delaying all the tactical stuff, which is just fun with me for a while. I want to hear about the sabbatical. A lot of people listening to the show, I've talked about this, know I'm on a family gap year. And it's been really good. There's been some challenges, but probably the one hardest thing about it that I have learned is that it's very difficult to fully disconnect when you have a business, right? I wasn't willing to sell my business to do it, but in a perfect world, being in between businesses is just the ideal situation, I would say, for which is what you had. So yeah, what if that sabbatical, was it just a 12-month period that you took, and what did you do for that time?
Yeah, so I had a transition period, so 6 months to help manage the transition of the business. And towards the end of that, there was less required of my time. So I got 40 days in skiing that winter and learned to ski. You know, that was my first time learning to ski, and I took a road trip. I went up to Banff and skied around the Pacific Northwest. And then I went back to Bali. I dove in learning Indonesian. That was something that I never really got to invest time in because my last business grew so quickly and I all of a sudden had 150 artisans and, you know, 20 to 40 people in the US that were all, you know, looking to me to run the business. And it takes time to learn a language. And so I got to do that, went and did scuba diving trip in Raja Ampat, the outer islands of Indonesia, came back. Well, actually, before I came back to the States, I went and did 2 months solo in Europe, backpacking, and stayed in hostels. So like low budget travel. I think I took 20,000 steps every day. I'm not normally somebody who travels fast. Like I love the whole idea of traveling slow, but I did like a different city every 2 or 3 days. And it was the right thing at the right time. 20 pounds in a backpack and no computer. So I had to completely disconnect and I was fully engaged. And like, you know, to cap off my 20s with a 2 month trip through Europe, it kind of made up for the backpacking trip that I never took in my earlier 20s because I was so busy running the business. And I proposed to my then girlfriend, now wife, that May. And then I got really into Southwest archaeology. You're so lucky in Tucson. You guys have an incredible archaeological center. You should totally go to their weekly talks. I'm obsessed with watching them on YouTube. I watch them every night. I was in Tucson a couple of weeks ago and walked into their office at Archaeology Southwest. And I was like, I love what you're doing. And I got really into visiting ancestral Pueblo ruins and went all over the Southwest and Four Corners area, hiking and camping in my camper. And after that, I had my creative juices refueled. I was ready to come back to the table and make something new.
Dude, what a year. You packed it in. That's really impressive. What is it about... So when you say Southwestern architect, it's not even architecture. Architecture is like modern buildings. And I love, one of the things I love about Tucson, and one of the things that put on my radar originally, I'm not an architecture guy, but a guy I got to know a little bit and lived here. He like us, kind of just picked it out and plopped down and moved here. And he was like, dude, the architecture and the buildings are so fascinating and interesting. And walking around our neighborhood in Tucson, you see all these cool kind of adobe stucco houses. There's so much creativity to them. They're in a time where like there's so many kind of cookie cutter things, they're just all different and unique and have a lot of character. But for you, it sounds like you're talking about like ancient stuff, like very, you know, kind of Native American. Is that, and what is it about that stuff that interests you so much?
Yeah. I mean, 1,000 years ago, there was a thriving civilization in the Four Corners area. The climate was somewhat more moist, so it was a little bit more livable. And, you know, visiting, a lot of people go visit Mesa Verde, the national park. Chaco Canyon is personally my favorite national park, a couple hours north of Taos. It is absolutely incredible to go and stand inside rooms that were built 1,000 years ago and like put your hand on a wood beam. And, you know, these wood beams that are in these structures that were built 1,000 years ago, they're able to date them using the tree rings and tell you exactly what year that was cut down. And like, when you see the massive amount of potsherds all over the ground, all the broken pieces of pottery with the incredible paintings, you're just like blown away that there was a civilization that thrived here for hundreds of years. Anyway, it just endlessly fascinates me. I can go on and on. I really love the book House of Rain by Craig Childs. If anybody is interested in Southwestern archaeology, it's a great starting point. Do that and then buy a ticket and rent a camper and go spend a couple of weeks chasing stuff down.
I love it. The Southwest is a pretty cool spot. I agree. On your year off, I feel like people sell a business and a lot of times they go one or two directions. They'll either leave, realize it was something that, man, so much space and mental clarity and peace, and they just don't come back to entrepreneurship, or they choose something else. I say more often than not, they end up coming back because that itch just comes back with a fury. Was it one of the two for you?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to end up doing next, but I knew I needed to take time off. And so that's what I did first and kind of put everything on ice, put all our stuff in storage. Yeah, and I didn't know what I was going to come back to, but I was feeling the creative juices flowing. And so at the end of 2022, I got back to kind of the drawing board and I was like, what do I want to make? I decided Q1 2023, I was just going to like play with ideas and just chase what interested me. So I made a big mood board of all the different materials I had and all the skill sets that were accessible and available. I thought about making signage out of recycled oil drums, like custom stuff. I really like custom businesses, which are always complex, but they spark my curiosity more than just a widget. Another project I worked on was custom birdhouses, like replica birdhouses, like doing purple martin birdhouses. And I went way down that rabbit hole of making these birdhouse condos and hired an architecture student to help me design them. I have one sample, realized that was not the right business. And then I thought I was going to get into squirrel feeders, and I still own the domain squirrelsjustwanttohavefun.com. I learned CAD, basic CAD, so I could design all these really cool squirrel feeders. Mark Rober's video was an inspiration there for sure. Squirrels Just Want to Have Fun did not come to be because I spent a lot of time in museums in Europe looking at stone carvings. You know, they're all deities and political figures pretty much. And then I spent a lot of time in the mountains. I don't know. It just kind of clicked. It's like, what would I want to have carved out of stone in my own house? You know, I know we've got this whole village of guys that have this incredible stone carving talent. I wonder if we could carve sculptures of mountains. And so in the start of 2023, we made our first sample. It's really rough. and I was like, you know, I think we're onto something. I think we could get somewhere. And I just kept, you know, bring small piecework jobs to different carvers, asking them, hey, can you carve this in this way? And tweaking things and visiting different stone suppliers to try to see what materials we could play with and what colors of stone were available. And yeah, that's ultimately the business that sparked my curiosity and I ultimately ran with.
I mean, apart from just sparking your curiosity, from a niche selection, a total mercenary approach, and which I know is not what you were following. You were kind of chasing what interested you for this chapter, but such a good market and a gift idea and just a product to sell. Like when I think about it analytically from an AOV perspective, your pieces start at $400 and go up as they get bigger. From a sentimentality perspective, I spent a lot of time in the mountains in my younger years. I spent less recently, but last month or two, I was like, I want to go back and do these 6 or 8 mountains that were that kind of came at milestone moments in my life or just that were a big deal. Sometimes it was because it was the people I was with. Sometimes it was because of the time of my life. Sometimes it's because they were just a really hard mountain to climb or something that, like the Grand Teton, for example. I grew up my whole life looking at the Grand Teton and always wanted to climb it. And so when I did climb it with my best friend in college, slightly outside of our comfort zone, like it was a big deal, right? So you nail that so well with just either people buying it for themselves or giving it as a gift. And also just the ability to, from a visual perspective, like I saw the video you had and you've got the video where you put it up, and just like most mountains change, a real mountain will change from the perspective you're looking at it or from the way the light is hitting it. Your sculptures do too. Anyway, it's just a brilliant niche idea, apart from the fact that you love it, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, I had a big shift in my life a couple of years ago. My graphic artist and I were flying over to Bali about this time. It was the end of March. We were flying from Miami to Qatar on our way to Bali, and we got 3 or 4 hours into the flight, and they turned all the lights on, had us put all the seats up. The flight attendants put those little yellow vests on and told us we were going to be making a water landing within 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh. Are you over the ocean at this point?
Middle of the ocean, middle of winter, middle of the night. The guy in front of me asked the flight attendant what was going on, and she whispered to him that the outer layer of the windshield had cracked. You know, they taught us all how to brace for impact and put your hands on the seat in front of you. And all of a sudden, you're like, this is it. And you're watching the altitude drop in real time on the screen in front of you. So you all of a sudden realize what matters and what doesn't matter. What didn't matter was my, you know, quarterly financials. What didn't matter was the emails that I hadn't responded to from before getting on the flight. I realized what I wanted to do most was to be able to say I love you and thank you to so many people who had done so much to help me. The third thing that I realized and that I committed to myself was that I wanted to have more moments of awe. And those moments of awe are like when you're looking up at the stars, you know, camping on top of Shadow Mountain across from the Tetons. Like, there's nothing quite like that. And I wanted to help people be able to connect with those memories. That ultimately is like the ethos behind the brand.
Dude, you should put that on the website. That's powerful. Whenever I get on we flew over the Pacific recently, you know, intellectually that statistically it's super safe. And I'm not a fearful guy, but I always wig out a little bit when I'm over the ocean like that for that exact same reason. I just think, dude, it's if it goes wrong, you're on another planet effectively, you know?
You're in a tin can in the sky. Yeah. But I still get anxious. Like on flights, sometimes they'll push the button and it dings and the lights will flicker mid-flight. I still get nervous, but I know objectively it's the safest thing. Thankfully, a couple hours later, we ended up landing in Boston. Once the plane got to 20,000 feet altitude, they stopped dropping the altitude. And I'm like, wait, what's happening? Like the altitude stopped dropping. And they got on the intercom and announced we'd be landing in Boston a couple hours later. It was still very tenuous because they said at any point, you know, be prepared. We could still need to make a water landing, but we landed, we made it. You know, from then on, that's kind of like what set a different course for my life. Prior to that, I was living in Florida. I realized I wanted to have a major shift. I wanted to be out in the mountains. I wanted to be camping. I wanted to be traveling. Yeah, I followed that new course since then.
Man, thanks for sharing that. I remember talking to you at ECF Live. I think it was San Antonio. We had lunch at the same table, and you were telling me you were moving out to Salt Lake, and didn't know the full backstory. But that was kind of what motivated the move and the change of life. And did that also lead a little bit into you deciding to sell the business, the first business too?
I think ultimately, yeah. Life events, you know, all culminated in that. But yeah, with the business moving to Salt Lake, we needed more warehouse space. We had a little retail store and shipping center, marketing office all in one building in Florida. And we were tapped out on space. And every year during holidays, we were hitting the upper threshold of what we could fulfill. I didn't want to sign a new multi-year lease, knowing that I wanted to kind of shift where I wanted to be. So made that big shift. And yeah, Utah's an awesome place to run a warehouse.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Julia from abarabove.com, where she and her husband and co-founder sell premium mixology products. Julia's been incredible. She's one of our meetup leaders in California and just an amazing human. And here's what she has to say about her experience with the e-commerce fuel private community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
Anytime I hire an agency or use software, I always search ECF first, not just for the specific software that I'm considering, but also on a broader sense. Like, Does anybody have recommendations? You know, what are you using for this? And on a large number of occasions, the ECF community has mentioned other alternatives that I may not have known about or considered. And as a result, a lot of times I've used those choices. And even better than that, sometimes I even got a discount. So I would say that's definitely the thing I most frequently use about ECF and also probably has provided the most direct benefit.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their seven or eight figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show.
On the passion front, people who've listened to the pod know that this kind of a stance, I've changed my mind on quite a bit. I think 15 years ago, passion was a liability. Not a liability, but it didn't serve you necessarily suit too well starting a business. And I think a lot of things have come about where it's changed, and having a deep passion and care and love for what you're doing and selling makes a huge difference and is a big competitive advantage in the marketplace today. I mean, for you running this business, and you had a cool business before, like Wander Bracelets, right? Like, you're making bracelets, you were working with great people, and you had to go to Bali, you got to help, you know, people in those villages. And so it's not that it wasn't a cool business, but this one is really born out of a very clear vision for what you wanted to do. Do you notice the business being a lot easier, more enjoyable to run? Do you feel like things click more? I guess what I'm asking is, given that it sounds like you have more of a passion and a vision for this one, how does that transpire into how it actually feels running the business?
Yeah, I like the idea of like making the thing you would want to give to somebody as a gift. So like 21, 22-year-old me hanging out on the beach, like I wanted to be able to give away bracelets, you know, to my friends. You know, that was the perfect gift. And like, it was so fun for years. Everywhere you go, you get to give one to the person at the restaurant, or you meet somebody on the bus or the train, or see somebody wearing it on the airplane and give them more. That was really fun and super aligned. And, you know, it was really fun having our own retail store. We had that for 5 years in Florida. So we got to really engage with the community. But this new chapter in my life, you know, it's like I've made a new thing that is kind of the ultimate gift for Father's Day for your dad, you know, like to give him the mountain he used to take you camping at as a kid. It's so significant for people. And the idea of making something that's solid stone on a beautiful wood base, it's the type of thing that your kids will fight over one day when so many other things will just end up in a box at the thrift store, you know. I think people really like the concept of creating modern heirlooms, you know, like you don't really need the Baccarat crystal for your kids to inherit, you know, like they don't want your collection of precious moments figurines. Maybe they do, but like this is the kind of thing that's going to hold memories that, you know, are there for you and your partner, you and your family.
They're beautiful. For people who haven't seen them before, obviously as a podcast, but recommend sculptedpeaks.com, I believe. Check them out. They're really beautifully done. The photography and the creative is excellent. Even the packaging. Like I noticed one thing, obviously, you don't highlight the packaging, but I was looking and I noticed the packaging and it seems like you send them in these wooden boxes that are kind of, I don't know if they're nailed together or how they're assembled, but it almost looks like something that like, if you were, I don't know, on a safari and someone mailed you something in the 1800s, like, and it was very nicely done and it showed up after a long trip on a steam freighter or something, that's how it would look. The packaging looks really neat. Will you talk a little bit about like what you did there, how much time you put into there and kind of how you think that ties in?
Yeah, we wanted to keep it simple and minimal, yet ultra durable. So the artisan workshop that we partner with to make all the pieces, as soon as they've completed a piece, they make a custom wooden crate to size, and then they custom cut the insert to put the sculpture into. And then, it shows up at your door, and you better have a drill or a screwdriver. You're not going to be opening your sculpture up on Christmas morning. So we send an email out telling people to be sure to have a Phillips head ready to go. But it's a really cool unboxing experience, not just another Amazon cardboard box. You know, it's really memorable to see dad, you know, whoever you're giving it to, open it up. It really adds to the experience.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten a man crate, or have you heard of man crates or seen them before?
I have. I didn't know about it until I made my packaging, and one of my friends is like, "Dude, this is like man crates."
Yeah, it's like a classier version of man crates. Usually, man crates. I mean, I love man crates. But I don't think they would mind because they have a very like tongue in cheek, self deprecating kind of funny voice behind their brand. But man crates are usually pulling out like jerky or you know beer stuff or grill stuff.
And they send you like a mini crowbar, right, to open it
yes,
up. I think
they do. Yeah, they send. Exactly, like crowbar to crack open it. You've got the slightly classier version of that. So it took you like 300 iterations. I was reading through your kind of background and stuff that you so generously provided, and like 300 iterations to get this right. It's how much work went into the kind of the prototyping of all this.
Yeah, from the start in January 2023 till we launched our Kickstarter, which was in September 2024. It was 18 months of R&D, at least 300 samples, lots of experimentation, different types of stone, different sizes, different thicknesses, different depths of carving, lots of different mountains we iterated on. But yeah, it took a while to figure out the region where these carvers live. They, you know, historically they were ivory carvers. You have some of the best carvers in the world because their grandparents or great grandparents were sitting there carving ivory for ivory traders that were moving ivory through the world and wanted fine detail carving. There were a couple pockets in the world where you had these groups of carvers. Obviously, that business is gone. But after that, there was fossilized ivory, so mammoth and walrus, and that's now almost entirely gone because out of an effort to save African elephants, they have banned the trade of fossilized ivory in the US and 13 states that were the major markets. So that's gone. So you've got bone, horn, wood, coconut. There's actually a couple people in e-commerce fuel. One of them, Danny, he has a business called Two Feather Plugs. He makes plugs like earrings and body jewelry and stuff. One village over from where our carvings are done. We're actually going to hang out in Bali in a couple weeks. Yeah, I mean, it's such a cool thing to be able to participate in a very small way in the preservation of heritage, you know, human artisan craft. I think it's so cool what 3D printers can do now and what CNC cutters can do. You know, it blows my mind. But at the same time, I still believe that people really appreciate handcrafted artisan goods and are willing to pay a premium for that. And like in the mountain space, there's people who are doing incredible stuff with CNC cutters. I love some of these topo maps that are coming out. I really want to get some for my office, you know, to have the whole Wasatch front hanging up on my wall, done with the topographic map. That's not something we're going to be able to do with any level of accuracy. Our sculptures are more akin to an oil painting than an accurate topographical map in terms of like detail and accuracy, you know.
And you've got kind of this interesting experience. When did you start Wander Bracelets? Was it 2014?
14, yeah. And then we started scaling 15. So we were there to kind of ride all the changes of Meta and Facebook. I remember in like, we made the first like 30-second explainer video for our brand, kind of like the Now This. Remember that Now This and Vox, like they would make these like short videos explaining something. And it was crazy how much organic traction it got. I remember Facebook used it in presentations of like examples of ad creative back at 2016, 17, you know, it's just such a different world watching the evolution of starting a business where everything was desktop native, you know, starting on like an iPhone 4 and looking at where we are now, where everything's on mobile. But with this new business, actually people want to make their big purchases on the computer. They want to see the ads and everything on mobile, but then when they're ready to like make that a serious purchase at something at this price point, they seem to be switching over to their desktops to pull the trigger.
Yeah. What, I mean, on those bigger price points, $400 for the small ones, what does a large go for? How much is that?
$1,200.
So yeah, a meaningful purchase. What have you found? Obviously, probably one of the best things you can do is just beautiful, creative, high quality photography so people know what to expect. But when you're getting up in the AOV on that, what other things have you found through trial and error or maybe from just customer feedback that has been really helpful for people feeling more confident about buying the product? What things have you tweaked that have made a difference?
Right now, people just love seeing videos of other people opening it up so they can see what they're going to experience. That seems to be single-handedly the best type of creative we can run that actually drives sales. I love videos of things being made by hand, like the hand carving stuff. It just I love watching it. I can watch it all day. I hope to hire some cool videographers to come in and do some really cool like ASMR style carving videos this year. But yeah, it'll be cool to see if those ads actually are the ones that get traction. Like with Meta ads now, everything has to be consolidated more and more into one campaign. And so it's going to be really interesting to see if any of those videos actually work as ads that convert, or they're just getting really good CPMs because people love watching videos of people carving stuff. I think people really enjoy seeing how it's hand carved, and that's a big part of what gives it the value. Like imagining themselves opening it up and having this beautiful stone sculpture that they get to watch the sunrise over every day and see the shadows change throughout the day as the light changes. That's a really cool kind of interactive thing that happens when you have a sculpture in your home. And for a lot of people, we might be the first sculpture they've ever bought. You know, it's a really cool way for people to commemorate a trip to like Denali or the first time hiking Kilimanjaro. Like those sculptures, Whitney's another one that people have really powerful memories attached to, especially it was their first big climb.
How do you get people to take videos unboxing it? Do you have something in an email? Do you call them? Like how do you make that work?
We are still building all that out. Yeah, we just got all our Kickstarter orders out the door in December. So we were lucky enough to have a handful of those backers send us videos. But yeah, we're going to be doing a bunch of that this year as we are scaling up. I'm still in the process of getting all of our email marketing set up and triggers all dialed in. So I'm mapping it all out right now.
Got it. Okay, man. So I didn't realize you started in 2013, but you had the kind of the R&D period. Kickstarter ended super recently. And I mean, we're only 3 months into getting those Kickstarter orders out. So you're still very much pretty early on in the process for this.
Yeah. We had a six-figure Kickstarter that ended September 13th and then went into overdrive getting all those sculptures out the door. Thankfully, as soon as people ordered on Kickstarter, we sent them an initial survey asking what they wanted so we could start having the carvers work on it right away. We were able to get everything shipped out the door to arrive to all the Kickstarter backers in time for Christmas. So I want to give myself a small round of applause for being a Kickstarter creator who fulfilled their orders on time.
Dude, you're a rare breed, my friend.
Although I continue to back them. I can't wait to get my Carbo Grill at some point this year.
I've missed this one. What is the Carbo Grill?
Oh, it's really cool. Like living in a camper a good part of the year, I'm grilling all the time. And I've got like a beater, I don't know, Coleman or Cuisinart. You'll have to check it out. K-A-R-B-O Grill. They need to join ECF if you're listening. They have just like redesigned a portable grill. And it's got a really cool form factor and aesthetic. And they've thought about all the features and, you know, they're delayed on fulfillment, I think, but they're sending really good updates about all the things they're doing to modify and tweak the design. So I'm stoked for it. I can still use my old beater grill in the meantime.
I got to check this out. I always am like cooking like, you know, super stinky, you know, gamey meat in the camper and smokes everyone out. So I got to get something that I can cook outside with. And I feel like you have the kind of business that is the perfect kind of smaller, more niche, but durable business. Takes longer to scale up, is more defensible once you get it scaled, makes something real, makes a real connection with people, something you care about. Like, I really think these are the types of businesses that are going to define the next 10 years of e-commerce on the small end. And on the big end, you're going to have the giants like Walmart and Amazon, and the middle is going to get hollowed out. It's kind of been my working theory for a couple of years now. How are you thinking about marketing this differently? Like, I know Meta seems like it's something that still works for you, it sounds like, based on what you said and kind of the prep that you sent for me. But how are you thinking about marketing this business differently than you did the first time around? Or are you still thinking about kind of it in the same way?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have relationships with boutique hotels where we have our sculptures in the guest rooms and they can take it home. The boxes in the closet and they can take the sculpture home, or they can have us drop ship it to them. I'd love to work with, you know, heliski operators or outfitters and really have a business where we're creating like bespoke mementos of travel. You know, we've surprisingly gotten really cool orders. Like, we're making golf club trophies for this beautiful golf course in the mountains here in Utah. And we're going to have like the perpetual trophy in their club that has the golfers' names for every year for the winners. And everybody gets a trophy to take home that wins around. Like, I'm not a golfer, so forgive me if I'm incorrect on that. Like, there's so many long-term relationships I want to build on, like, the, I guess, B2B front that is really where I want to take the business. But when you do fair trade artisan production, this is a really good point to touch on. You have to order consistently over time. You can't just come in and order 10,000 units of something and walk away. Like, there's plenty of companies out there that will go and order artisan products, but they're not following, like, fair trade principles, which is like coming in and saying, we want to build a relationship with you. We, you know, our US business wants to order from your business, and we want to help you scale and develop capacity and do whatever we can to support you. And so with this business, if I was to get an order tomorrow for 1,000 units from the National Park Service, that would tie up all of my production for the next, you know, however many weeks, and we'd have to rapidly scale. And it's like, if you have these big bumps and then drop-offs, it's really hard to continue to scale an artisan team. So anyway, direct-to-consumer e-commerce for me is a way to, you know, find those needles in a haystack of people that want a custom sculpture of a mountain. And it takes time to make a new design. And so, like, you're in Tucson, what's the first mountain that, like, you, that comes to mind for you where you are?
There's two. I mean, the Catalinas are the biggest ones to the north, but the mountain that I have my eye on, I'd love to climb next, is peak called Bobicavari. And I think I'm butchering the pronunciation, but that's the one.
So yeah, so people, you know, wherever they are, they'll be emailing us and be like, wait, you don't have this mountain? You know, there's a lot of mountains like that. There's like 200-300 that we need before people stop emailing us being like, how do you not have this? You know, and like the Kickstarter, we had to keep it pared down because you have to keep it simple. Like, I don't know how many emails we got criticizing us because we didn't have Pikes Peak. Apologies to everyone in Colorado Springs. We have it now. We can get it shipped out to you in a couple of weeks. But yeah, so one of the things we're doing right now, this week actually, we're building out pages on our site to create first editions of various mountains. So like, if you want the first edition of Mount Shasta and we haven't made it yet, we've now got a page on our site. You can go and have the first edition made just for you. And then you get to go back and forth with our team. We'll get on a 15-minute like design consult with you and figure out which part of the mountain you want to focus on, what shape you want it to be, what ratio you want it to be. We'll make yours as the first piece. We may or may not like tweak that design before it, you know, gets permanently added to our collection along with the others. That's proving to be really cool because then people can go through our site and find the mountain that they're looking for. And, you know, it's a cool way to build out our collection while making pieces for people rather than just aimlessly making samples. You know, because some of these mountains too, like the Colorado 14ers, there's 58 of them and they all have different viewpoints. So I'm sitting here, I've never hiked them and I am looking at them and I'm like, oh my gosh, which one of these viewpoints? So if you're in Colorado and you want a 14er, send us an email because we'd love input on you know, which viewpoints to use. And some mountains too, like, you know, the Tetons, there's kind of agreed upon viewpoints. Like you have all the turnoffs, you know, you got the Teton Point turnout, you've got the Snake River Overlook where Ansel Adams took his famous photo. Like there's certain spots that it's like, if we can get the Molten Barn with that view, we know this is like one of the most photographed as well as the most like visited viewpoints. But other places like Mont Blanc, there are so many viewpoints. It's going to take a while to get them all built out.
Well, even like you mentioned about mountains are so personal. Like for me, I grew up on the west side of the Tetons where most people don't see them. And so the view of the Tetons for me is very, the classic one I think of in my brain is different from the ones you see on like most postcards if you were going to buy them in Jackson. So, and it's crazy how mountains have such a unique personality. Sometimes a mountain won't even look like the same mountain if you're 90 degrees or 180 degrees. Or you maybe, yeah, I mean, it's amazing how they can transform with a little perspective shift. When you think about building this business a second time around, you had like some unholy number of people working for you with wander bracelets. What are some of the things that you're going to do different from an operations perspective? I know you mentioned like being lean is really important to you. So maybe what are some things you're not going to be doing this time? Roles you may not have, things you're going to try to automate instead the second time around?
Yeah, I think a lot of times entrepreneurs start businesses imagining that it's going to bring them freedom, especially if you like read the 4-hour work week. I got to read it in 2010, freshman year, first class, intro to business. And our professor put that down on the table for us day one. That was the first book we read. I think he got in trouble with the school for doing that. you know, it was 2010. The book had, I think it was like 2008 that Tim Ferriss wrote it. So it was early. That got the wheels in my head spinning in the wrong direction to go to traditional business management business school. But yeah, I mean, you start a business for freedom, but like you also have multiple dreams. Like I dreamed of having a cool retail store and having all the community involvement and having a creative studio where we could do photography and video in the studio in real time and then walk down to the fulfillment center and walk up to the retail store. Like it was a really cool experience to have had, but I no longer yearn for that experience. Like I'd rather be, you know, doing Zoom calls 4 or 5 hours a day in my camper in the middle of nowhere using, you know, the internet on a satellite network and be able to be wherever I am and fully engaged in the business and still be able to prioritize having those moments of awe in nature. And so with that, it's going to be a remote dispersed team. And yeah, I'm just going to try to keep as much flexibility in the business as possible. I mean, it helps not having to have our own fulfillment center. That was a big thing with custom jewelry is like we couldn't get around that. I think now there's 3PLs that can do customization affordably, but between 2014 and 2019, that did not exist. So we had to build out all that infrastructure ourselves, which was really capital intensive. And, you know, there was a tremendous amount of overhead that forced us to keep the business operating at a certain level of revenue to maintain profitability. So, you know, my aim is to have a business that's agile and flexible. And if it needs to flex up or down, it can. But, you know, a true commitment to artisan craft, following the line of like, what would I want to give somebody as a gift? You know, like I'm really excited to go experiment with new stone colors and base types. And I've got different design modification ideas in my head to work on over the next couple of months. I'm about to go spend Q2 going over to Bali on a business trip and meeting with artisan teams and suppliers and shipping and all those things.
Last question for you, just purely based on, it sounds like you've got your headquarters in Salt Lake, but you spend a lot of time in Bali. You also spend a lot of time on the road in your camper exploring. Talk a little bit about how that looks, like how much time you're spending, how you make that work, kind of the interplay between these three different worlds that you live in. Because I always think that's cool how when people are able to create these lives that allow them to explore a lot of different places consistently, I think that's such an awesome thing to be able to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, roughly Q1 and Q3, I spend in the States, and Q2 and Q4, I spend in Indonesia right now or traveling. My wife, Candace, she is an artist, and she goes on the road 25 weeks a year right now, selling her art in juried fine art shows all over the country, everywhere from Key West to Seattle. She's been to every corner of the country, and her art business is called Candice Art. She does original cyanotypes, like she collects massive tropical leaves and does sun prints with them. So she is on the road doing art shows pretty much Q1, Q3. So it makes more sense to be in the States during those months. And she has a built-out Sprinter van that she lives in. And she has her own business and does her own thing, which is awesome. Some summers when she was doing shows in Colorado, we would kind of caravan. I'd have my camper and she'd have hers and I could go do what I needed to do. And then we'd meet up part of the week. And yeah, so she's driving back right now. She'll be back in Salt Lake tomorrow after 3 months of shows in Florida. So that's a big part of the schedule. But for us, both of us love being on the road. I'm going to help her out with her e-commerce business because a lot of what we're doing with Sculpted Peaks on the marketing side should be able to copy paste into her project this year as well.
That's super cool. Ben, you built such a neat business, man. I've always enjoyed talking with you and I've had the chance on not a whole lot of occasions, but whenever we do. And what you've built at Sculpted Peaks is just, I remember when I saw it for the first time, because I always thought of you. I don't think I knew about it for a little while because you were the bracelet guy in my mind. And then when you told me you were doing this, I was like, this is so cool. This is such a cool business. We've built it from the supply chain all the way through to just the passion that comes through on the product side to the packaging. It's just a cool business, man. And I love what you've done with thinking about it intentionally with your life as well. So congrats on the business. Congrats on the past sale and even bigger congrats on building something that you love working on. And that's pretty neat in the world. So sculptedpeaks.com, make sure to check it out. How many different mountains do you have now? Is it like 60, 40 or 50 different versions you have? Or different mountains people can pick from?
Yeah. And we're adding more every week. And yeah, a really quick thank you so much, Andrew, for everything you've done with the e-commerce fuel community. You know, when you exit a business, there's always threads about this. Whenever people exit, is like there's this empty void of like, what do I do next? You know, and having a community of other serial e-commerce entrepreneurs who come at things from very different perspectives, they've been so encouraging and supportive and helpful through the whole process. Like, you know, I worked launching the Kickstarter last year with an ECF member, and so many people have aided me through the whole process from the community. So there's no way I would have been able to get this new project off the ground without the group that you've built. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, appreciate it. Had a lot of help doing it. So glad it's been helpful. And have a good time at Bozeman. You're headed up there like what, in a week or two?
Couple days, yeah.
Couple of days, not to dock
Saturday.
We'll publish this later. You guys are skiing up at Bridger Bowl or Big Sky. Where are you headed?
Big Sky, I think, yeah. Then go visit some friends who live in Bozeman. So and get in the camper and hit the road.
Great, man. Well, have fun. And then your wife's, you said Candace, what's her website again one more time? If people want to check it out, we'll make sure to link up to it. How do you spell it?
Oh, yeah. CANDICHEART.com. So CandiceArt.com. It's her nickname from art school.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Well, Ben, so good talking. Thank you for sharing and looking forward to the next time we get a chat.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew.
Forging what matters. Few things compare to the feeling of coming home at 3 a.m. when you're not supposed to be out of the house and seeing all the lights in your house on. This was the night of my 18th birthday, and I had had a midnight curfew, which to my mind was far too early, and subsequently snuck out, coming back about 3 a.m. to finding this scene. And as I walked in with a huge pit in my stomach, my mother was sitting in a rocking chair in a dark room. And she looked at me and she said, "Do you know where your father is right now?" I didn't say anything. She said, "He's down driving along the river looking for your dead body." And I can laugh a little bit at this with some distance. And it shows my mother's tendency a little bit toward being tightly wound, slightly dramatic at times, but it also illustrated a bit of the challenge she was up against. She had her work cut out for her as my mother. Ask her sometime and she'll be more than willing to tell you horror stories of little Andrew. I was a handful. And I think it's therapeutic for her to kind of get these off her chest. But apart from helping keep me out of juvie as a kid, she taught me a tremendous amount. And she is and was an amazing mom. And in the spirit of Mother's Day this Sunday, I wanted to reflect on a few of those things that come to mind. Some of the things she taught me so much. She taught me about entrepreneurship. I would not have a business or be an entrepreneur if it wasn't for her. It's a little bit of a common story, but you know, shoveling, mowing lawns, all that kind of stuff. She would kick us out of the house, you know, when we were 10 or 11 on snow days to go make money. She was always pushing for us to go earn. Importantly, she didn't buy everything for us. So we had an incentive to earn money. And we would not have an entrepreneurial spirit, myself and my brother, if it wasn't for her. She really taught us the value of money. I remember, you know, we'd drive through the fancy neighborhoods in the small Idaho town I grew up in. And she'd say, "You see those houses?" She'd say, "We could live there if we wanted to. On what we make. And you could wear the super fancy shoes for basketball, you know, the super nice, like the Nikes and the Reeboks with the pumps. You know, you'd pump up the little bubble, it would inflate your shoe with air. Oh, I wanted one of those so badly, but they were like $150 a pop 25 years ago. She said, "We could get all those, but then you'd have no money for college." Also, her, "Why are you upset about the pink shoes that I bought you and that you're supposed to wear to school today in first grade?" She said, "They were a screaming deal at the garage sale. What's the problem? People are calling you a girl. Well, are you a girl? No. Well, tell them you're not a girl. What's the problem?" And these are all true. And I tease a little bit. I don't have any resentments for them. They're a little bit extreme in cases. But my mom taught me a really impressive and valuable lesson, was that money can either buy freedom or stuff. And for my parents, it was much more important to buy freedom. And, you know, they were probably in their... You know, they spent like 15, 20 years just being very intentional with their money, where they were able to quit a very good engineering job in my dad's early 50s and go do things that were much more meaningful. And I always thought that was really cool. She taught me about investing and saving and how stocks worked. She made me pay my taxes when I was like a 14-year-old kid making $2,500 per year in cash mowing lawns, just so that I would understand how hard you had to work for money and so I could file my own taxes. I think that's a pretty unique one. Did not appreciate it at the time, but it served me well. She was incredibly generous and taught me that if you can't give when you have a little, you're not going to be able to give when you have a lot. She's an incredibly hospitable woman. We often would host in our house. And growing up, we didn't have a big house. It was, I don't know, maybe 1,900 square feet for five people. It got tight at times. The kitchen was especially small. But despite all those things, she would pack people in there. We'd have good friends over frequently. We'd often host Thanksgiving. But even more so, she would always invite the people who didn't quite fit anywhere else. The people that were a little awkward, maybe people that were at times, we had some homeless people, you know, that were at the shelter over for Thanksgiving. It wasn't always comfortable. Sometimes it was a little strange, but she was always good about being really gracious and loving and hospitable. You know, you'd come in, she'd get you a drink, incredible sense of hospitality. She taught us about manners and social graces. It gets annoying as a kid. I mean, even as an adult now, when I'm watching my kids eat like a bunch of just like ravaged feral hyenas and trying to get them into line. She taught us about that, taught us about writing notes, showing appreciation. I don't think I would have been able to build a community without many of the soft skills that she pounded into me with love, of course, over the years. She facilitated a love for computers. She and my dad bought me an IBM PC Junior, which is dating me here a little bit here, when I was, I don't know, 11 or 12, put it in my room and just let me have at it. It wasn't a cheap thing, but they encouraged my interest. They knew I loved computers. And they invested there, from that computer to taking me to classes. And there's no way I would have had the technical background I have or I needed to start my company. And it's something I'm trying to do with my kids, is really encourage the things that they love. Even though my son likes to collect electronic parts and hoard them, ever-increasing disgusting piles in our garage, it's something I'm trying to also emulate that my mom did. She taught us how to work out issues civilly. If my mom is upset about something, she will tell you. She won't hide it. She'll be very frank about her feelings, but she's able to do it in a way that is calm and measured and not yelling at you, which is a pretty unique ability. I once had some brouhaha with my mom in the car. We were arguing about something as adults, and there was someone else close to us that was inside, close enough where we felt comfortable having it out. And after the fact, they came up and they said, that is amazing how you are able to work through these issues that are kind of raw, but in a way where you don't just devolve into yelling at each other. And that's something my mom is really good at. She sacrificed her career to raise three kids as a stay-at-home mom, you know, an incredibly noble and important of all jobs, even if society sometimes poops all over it. I can't thank her enough for the sacrifice she made for us in those early years. And you know, my mom has all sorts of weaknesses too, just like the rest of us. She's an incredible weakness for chocolates in the morning. She's a bit of a worrier. Many other things I'm tempted to roast her about because that is my nature and I like to do that. But I will save those for a different time because she's a wonderful mother and this is Mother's Day. And also, probably I should save them because at this moment, or at least this weekend, she will be watching our kids while Annie and I head down to Mexico City for an ECF team retreat. Very poor planning on my part. I'm sorry, Mom. I really didn't mean to do this on Mother's Day. Hopefully the evening before festivities were fun. Mom, thanks for your patience, your love, regularly putting your kids and your family's interests above your own. You're a great mom. I love you. And thanks for everything you've poured into us. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.